You're listening to the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Mike Green. My guest is Jonathan Bach. He's a reporter covering housing and commercial real estate for the Oregonian. He previously wrote for the Portland Business Journal, which featured a cover story he wrote about the rising cost of housing in Bend several years ago. That story became the basis for Jonathan's new book titled High Desert, Higher Costs, Bend and the Housing Crisis in the American West. Welcome to the Jefferson Exchange, Jonathan.
Thanks so much for having me.
So let's dive into this gigantic issue. Your book opens with the story of you and your wife, McKenna, on a road trip to Tacoma, Washington, and she's checking out real estate in Bend. She comes across a small old house listed for more than $1 million. Tell us that story.
So my wife and I were driving up to Tacoma to see a friend. I was deep into the reporting process of High Desert, Higher Costs, and she was scrolling through Instagram on one of those pages that has, you know, old houses for sale, and it's just sort of collects them from across the US. And featured on the page was a Craftsman in Bend that was, as you noted, listed for more than $1 million. And it was McKenna and I, and one of our friends was in the back seat too. We're all driving up. And she starts sort of reading the comments that I think were probably from residents. One of them said, you know, Bend is just a little Los Angeles now, except with Patagonia jackets. And people were, you know, justifiably aghast at the price for this, you know, very modest Craftsman house.
So Redfin this year listed, I think it's a place near Bend, as the number two most expensive place to buy a house here in Oregon. And I'm wondering what caused the prices in the Bend region to rise so rapidly?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I mean, it's been, just as the reporting in the book shows, it's been a confluence of factors. It's been the post-2008 decline in home building. It's been, and that was exacerbated by the COVID-19 pandemic, sort of the, you know, you could call it the rush of folks into Bend who were seeking that lifestyle, the mountain lifestyle. You know, there's the old John Muir adage, the mountains are calling and I must go. And a lot of urban expats embraced that during the pandemic. So we had the confluence of the Great Recession. Deschutes County in particular was one of the hardest hit counties in the U.S. during the Great Financial Crisis. Home building didn't rebound quickly enough as population rebounded in the 2010s to keep up with those population gains, more residents coming into Bend and Deschutes County. And then you had COVID-19 just sort of add fuel to that fervor.
And you have the upscale community of Sun River, right, adjacent to Bend. Sure. Does that factor into the equation?
I think that it does in a sense. I used to live in Sun River, and my sister and I did housekeeping at Sun River when we were teenagers, just for fun money. And, you know, there's some very Tony houses in Sun River, sure. There are also a lot of just regular houses outside of the resorts. Sun River, for those who haven't been there, is a resort community, you know, maybe 20, 25 minutes outside of Bend, and just on the periphery of the village, as it's called, which is sort of the main part of Sun River where like the resort is and there's shopping and all that. There are a lot of just like regular houses, like the one that my parents rented when in the sort of mid-aughts. And, you know, you can drive from there up to Mount Bachelor. So I think that Sun River, you could look at Sun River, you could look at Lapine, you could look at Madras, you could look at Terrebonne, you could look at Redmond. Bend has been sort of the nucleus for a lot of that housing price explosion, but that has ripple effects throughout Jefferson County and Deschutes County.
Okay, so let's take a step back in time when Bend was just getting started. Can you read an excerpt from your book that tells that story?
Yeah, I would love to. So this is sort of at the earliest days of Bend. Now, you know, Native people had been in Oregon since time immemorial, but as white settlers were situating themselves in Deschutes County. This is where this excerpt picks up. White settlers didn't situate Bend near the Deschutes River by accident. Native people had found ways to cross the raucous river, and the newcomers did too. Wagon trains aimed for safe river crossings and looked for the landmark Pilot Butte, the lifeless cinder cone protruding like an earthen boil some 500 feet high. During the mid-19th century, United States survey teams and scouts explored what is now Central Oregon. Oregon became a state in 1859, and in 1877, a claim was put in for a ranch called Farewell Bend, near a crook in the Deschutes, south of present-day downtown. In 1903, a new local paper, the Bend Bulletin, started printing from a hand press inside a log building. In one of its first issues, the Bulletin forecast unprecedented prosperity to come as the railroad opened the desert to more people. The young paper vowed, "We shall work at all times for the development of Bend and the upper Deschutes country. It shall be our constant aim to foster and further the efforts of settlers who may intend to make their homes and fortunes in our midst." The name Bend became the shorthand for Farewell Bend, where passing travelers glimpsed the Deschutes River one last time. In 1905, Bend's 500 or so people transformed their rough community into a proper city. Kelly Cannon Miller, the Deschutes County Historical Society's executive director, told me in 2021, "The people who were coming here in 1905 really wanted the same things as the folks who are coming here now, a place where they felt comfortable and could enjoy life while making a living." The wealthy caught notice of the high desert splendor. Alexander Drake, a moneyed Minnesotan, rolled into Farewell Bend by covered wagon in 1900, before residents voted to incorporate. Drake went on to earn the moniker the Father of Bend. The Bulletin described him as a Midwestern capitalist who was reportedly lured west by irrigation possibilities and the availability of good fishing. Drake worked at surveying and platting the town in 1901 and 1902, and in the spring of 1903, he had the streets laid out with a horse-drawn plow. His Pilot Butte Development Company began the first delivery of water to lands adjacent to Bend in 1904. Drake's wife, Florence, had a hand in guiding the town's layout. Mrs. Drake loved every one of the cow trails on which these streets are located today, Elmer Ward, who helped with the work, recounted in a 1953 interview with the broadcaster KBND. She insisted that we locate the streets of Bend along those contours that formed the cow trails of those days. And when we followed instructions, and that's why we have the winding streets.
Our guest is Jonathan Bach. He's the author of High Desert, Higher Costs, Bend and the Housing Crisis in the American West. So Jonathan, Bend was a lumber mill town in its early years, but you wrote, curiously enough, one of the attractions of Bend and of Central Oregon in 1910, as it still is today, was the attempt to flee the big city and return to the country, end quote. So it seems that the attraction to Bend has remained the same for more than a century.
Mm-hmm. It really has. I mean, the idea that tourism, that a tourism boom is sort of new, that, again, I use this phrase, sort of urban expats, you know, people who are leaving the big city are coming to Bend. There is sort of a novelty, I guess you could say, in the density of that immigration, but it's not a new thing for Bend. Just the passage that you were talking about, it comes from a 1910 copy of the Bulletin, where a Chicago tradesman says, "I, along with many more, am getting tired of this humdrum life and long for the quiet of the country." And he's talking about how living in Chicago is so expensive and the rent is going up all the time. And so he has this desire to go west. So I think that you could have written that same quote in a sense, or the theme of that quote, in 2020, 2021, when you had the quote unquote Zoom towns, where remote workers freed from their desks came into these amenities-driven communities like Bend, like Bozeman, Montana, like Sun Valley, Idaho. It is, in a sense, an American story.
Now, you mentioned Zoomtown and amenities. What do you mean by that?
When I talk about amenities, we're talking about these sort of recreational amenities. You know, in Ashland, We're talking about the Shakespeare Festival or the Siskiyou Mountains or the Cascades or the Rogue River. All those things that might prompt somebody from Seattle or San Francisco to pack up and move out to a Bend or an Ashland, especially if they're untethered from their office and they can do their job, their high paying, you know, remote work job from anywhere in the US. And that's what we saw a lot of during COVID-19.
And so you've classified these kinds of beautiful, idyllic settings of places like Ashland and Bend as Zoom towns.
Yeah. And I want to be clear, that's not my phrase. That's Connor Sen. He's a Bloomberg columnist. But that phrase got pinging around the internet in mass during the pandemic. And I wanted to sort of interrogate that idea in this book. What is a Zoom town? How much did it actually influence the housing market? The conclusion I came to in Bend is that, yeah, it definitely influenced the housing market, but it also just put a name to a pre-existing trend. Bend was already, for years and years and years, a remote work destination, a telecommuting destination. You had one of the highest concentrations of telecommuting workers in Bend in the country. And so, like a lot of things, COVID-19 just sort of added to that.
So Bend's growth soon became growing pains during the Great Recession.
Mm-hmm.
Talk about that.
So I remember I went to Bend High during the Great Recession. You know, I graduated in 2012, to date myself a little bit. And so the 2008 financial crisis was, you know, sort of around my freshman year. And I remember our gym teacher pulling students into the Bend High gym and sort of sitting us down in the bleachers and asking us, you know, does anybody want to talk about what's going on? And one kid basically, you know, confided, like, you know, that their dad's retirement savings had just gotten wiped out. Now, I don't know what industry he worked in, but I think that was emblematic of a lot of the pain that Deschutes County broadly was feeling. According to one Associated Press index, Deschutes County felt some of the worst recession pain in the U.S. By a number of economic measures. Bend is known as sort of a boom-bust economy, especially when it comes to construction. We talked earlier about how it's a former lumber town, and that has definitely waned in recent decades as Oregon has weaned off of timber as a mainstay industry. But construction is also a huge industry in Bend, and it felt a lot of the not only economic pain, but just, you know, a sort of a psychic toll during the recession. And so home building in the years after the Great Recession was very slow to rebound, was very slow to catch up, even as we saw population sort of start to reaccelerate in the 2010s. And once again, COVID-19, you see even more people coming into Bend because it's like, ooh, like, you know, we thought there were, you know, a lot of telecommuters before. Now you've got the sort of Zoom town dynamic of now people, even more people, don't have to be latched to their San Francisco or Seattle or Denver office building. And Bend was getting a lot of press. It was getting a lot of national attention, as were, again, communities like Boise and Bozeman in Idaho and Montana. And that just, you know, it sort of created a certain frothiness in the housing market. I say frothiness, but the median home price in Bend, you know, according to the latest Beacon report, which is one of the trusted reports that's reported on locally when you're looking at median home prices. So in April, the median home price in Bend was $832,000. I mean, that's nearly $1 million for a median priced home in Bend. It's cooled off a little bit. It cooled down to about $700,000 in June. And then the latest report in July shows it at about $750,000. For comparison, and I was just, you know, looking at how does Ashland look, you know, before this. The median home price in Ashland is about $550,000. Mind you, Bend and Ashland aren't sort of a great one-to-one comparison because the populations are different size cities and stuff. But that's just to give you a flavor of like how constrained the housing market is in Bend.
Okay, let's hold it right there. We have to take a quick break. And when we come back, I want you to finish that thought. I want the comparison between Ashland and Bend is interesting. We have to take a short break. I'll be right back with my guest, Jonathan Bock, author of High Desert, Higher Costs, Bend and the Housing Crisis in the American West. I'm Mike Green. You're listening to the Jefferson Exchange on JPR. Welcome back to the Jefferson Exchange. I'm Mike Green. My guest is Jonathan Bock. He's the author of High Desert, Higher Costs, Bend and the Housing Crisis in the American West. And before the break, you were talking about the median home prices in Bend versus here in Ashland. And Ashland's is roughly, what, 20,000 in population? And what's right. Bend?
It's about 110, 109, 110.
So that's a significant difference in price and in population.
Exactly. So it's interesting to me, actually, Ashland's median home price is roughly on par with Portland's, which you wouldn't expect that with, you know, a community of 20,000 up against our largest metro, right? But I think what that shows, again, what the governor talks about, what economists talk about, if we're just going to expand this out to Oregon, not just talking about Bend as a amenity community, as a community where recreational amenities like mountains and skiing and biking draw lots and lots of people. Bend is sort of a poster child for a lot of these housing troubles, but Oregon in general has a housing shortage. I mean, I've reported on this since several years ago when I worked at the Statesman Journal in Salem, in the capital city, and then at the Portland Business Journal, you know, reporting on efforts to assuage this housing shortage. This is years and years and years in the making. A lot of what we're living through right now is sort of the aftershocks still of that underproduction post-Great Recession. So you're seeing that in Ashland, you're seeing it in Bend, you're seeing it in Portland.
Well, if we have a housing shortage, then the houses that we do have, the cost of those houses have skyrocketed, and the people who can afford those are people whose incomes are in the upper levels of the socioeconomic strata. And the question that I ponder is, where does everyone else live who can't afford a $700,000-$800,000 home? And you tell the stories of Colleen Sensky and Greg Delgado. Tell me about them.
Yeah, Colleen and Greg, first off, like, I just want to thank both of them for letting me follow their stories for a couple of years. I mean, that was one of the reasons I wanted to do this book, was to follow two or more people over the course of a couple of years. Not something we typically get to do in newspaper reporting, just because of daily deadlines and, you know, you're putting out a paper every day. Sometimes, if you're lucky, you get a few months, but it was a really great exercise in patience on their part to let this, you know, intrusive journalist prod them with questions over the course of not only, you know, a pandemic, but also as they were living through a lot of these housing stressors. So Colleen, to start, is the head of a nonprofit in Bend that helps people who are experiencing homelessness. It's called Central Oregon Fuse. And Colleen published an op-ed several years ago, basically forecasting that as a nonprofit worker, she would not be able to live in Bend 3 years hence. She did not think that she was going to, with the wage she was making, be able to afford this rapidly escalating housing market where people were getting pushed out. And she made the argument that people like her, workers like her, were necessary to the local economy. You know, firefighters, teachers, nonprofit workers. The point that I make about Colleen in the book is that, you know, part of her mission was to build one of the first what's called permanent supportive housing apartment complexes in Central Oregon. These are apartments that are meant to help people experiencing homelessness. They've got lots of services that are tailored specifically to help people from going back into homelessness. So if Colleen Sinsky, who is trying to help people who are experiencing homelessness, is worried about herself being able to afford to live in Bend, you're potentially removing one of these sort of cornerstone, to use the ecological example, like a cornerstone species out of your ecology. That is a problem. So I tell the story without giving anything away. I don't want to spoil the book, but without giving away, I followed Colleen and her journey over the course of a couple of years. And Colleen also, I will say, she was part of the original Portland Business Journal cover story. So she really was in it for the long haul.
And then you tell the story of Greg Delgado.
Greg was somebody that Colleen put me in contact with. They didn't know each other, I don't think, personally, but she'd sort of heard of him and she knew him through a local connection. And so Greg's story was that he was evicted during COVID-19. Lawmakers, both, you know, federal officials and then Oregon lawmakers, put in place, if we remember back, these sort of bans on eviction during COVID-19. But they were bans on eviction for non-payment of rent. So if you didn't pay your rent during COVID-19, you would still be able to stay in your house. Like you couldn't get evicted from your house. Well, Greg got evicted and it went to court. It went to an eviction trial. Greg got evicted because he left personal items in a common area of his apartment building. And that was a technical violation of his lease. So it's 2021. It's the height of the COVID-19 pandemic. And Greg is evicted. He has to basically... He's been in this apartment near downtown Bend for, I think it was going on a decade. He has to find somewhere to go. He says at one point I went back and listened to the entire eviction trial because it happened right before he and I met. I actually met him right after he got evicted. So I did a public records request to listen to the trial audio and went through all the court records. And he had to figure out, you know, what am I going to do? Where am I going to go? At one point in a court brief, he said, you know, if I am evicted from my home, I don't have anywhere to go. So I followed Greg as well for we had conversations over the next 2 years as he navigated this extraordinarily precarious position of being evicted during COVID-19 when, again, you know, lawmakers and officials had put in place bans that were, they were limited in scope.
My guest is Jonathan Bock. He's the author of High Desert, Higher Costs, Bend and the Housing Crisis in the American West. You also tell the story of John Crom and the vacation rentals in Bend being a problem among the locals. Why?
So in the investigative spirit, I wanted to understand how much vacation rentals influence the housing market, because we hear a lot, and I've reported on vacation rentals before, again, for daily stories, but I wanted to do sort of a deep dive. So there's an entire chapter on short-term rentals, particularly if Bend is an attractive community for vacationers, for tourists, if tourism is a key part of Bend's economy, how much do short-term rentals, do Airbnbs influence the housing market? So I wanted to examine that. John Crom, another really gracious interviewee and real estate agent, he also owns, he and his wife own some Airbnbs. So I interviewed him to chat about, sort of get into his head about, like, why do you own them? What do you think of, you know, the blowback that you get locally? Because, you know, many people do not like that there are, Airbnbs in Bend. And he and I chatted through that. But what I found that was pretty interesting in the course of the reporting and actually looking through a, for instance, University of Oregon study, because researchers at the University of Oregon years ago wanted to examine that very question. And then also the Bend City Council wanted to examine that very question. So two data points basically showed that Airbnbs, at least in Bend, short-term rentals in Bend, don't really make up a huge portion of the overall housing stock. You know, the caveat being every single housing unit matters, every unit on the market matters, But in terms of, you know, overall share, it was kind of it was a few percentage points of the overall housing stock in Bend.
But the locals didn't like it.
The locals, I mean, they have a bad reputation.
You tell the story of Stevens Road and the urban growth boundaries. What's an urban growth boundary and how has been impacted by it?
So the urban growth boundary is something that has been with Oregon since effectively the 1970s. And Governor Tom McCall was a Republican governor who was one of our most conservationist and environmentally friendly governors. I like to think of urban growth boundaries as Tom McCall's big hug around cities. And what UGBs do is effectively allow cities to plan for growth. They constrain growth. They constrain where you can build in a city or around a city. And they also constrain effectively like developable land. So I did a chapter on what's known as the Stevens Road Tract on the east side of Bend, which was it was brought into the urban growth boundary during the pandemic as sort of an emergency measure. Oregon lawmakers recognizing a housing crunch in Bend allowed the local governments to bring this several hundred acre tract into their UGB. And what I found was even with this sort of emergency measure to bring this land into UGB, it's still going to be potentially like a decade to 2 decades before you see the housing on the Stevens Road tract that will help assuage that housing crunch. That said, you know, it's still more housing that will help out. So it's like, is it better to do something now than not to do anything? I mean, that's sort of the argument. It's like, you know, that's not a reason to just do nothing. But on the other side, like conservationists cherish the UGBs because they do protect what Oregonians love, which is our lack of sprawl. We're not California. We have really beautiful land in between cities, and we have UGBs to thank for that. So the big tension in Oregon is how much do we expand UGBs? When do we expand them? A lot of, you know, sometimes fights, appeals crop up when we expand UGBs. And it is a central tension in Oregon politics.
Well, we have a couple of minutes left, and you have a chapter titled "Who Gets to Live in the American West?" What's the answer?
You know, I wanted people to think about that for themselves. I wanted people to think about that chapter heading as something of a call to action to think about, you know, their own lives, about their own economic status. I think, you know, it comes down to there are deep economic disparities, deep socioeconomic disparities by race, by class in Oregon still today that divide who can live comfortably in Oregon. Whether you're talking about Ashland, whether you're talking about Bend, whether you're talking about Portland. And I think I wanted to get at a slice of that theme in this book. You can't tell, there's a, you know, saying in journalism where, you know, you can never tell the full story that you want to tell all the time, but you get at it with just trying to tell a sliver of it. And hopefully that sort of helps people understand the larger, you know, social problems. And I wanted to get at a piece of that in this book.
Well, in our closing minute, you introduced us to Colleen. You introduced us to Greg. Any happy endings there?
Well, I don't want to spoil the book, but I will say there are complicated endings, but there is also moments of hope.
Okay. What do you want people to take away from your book?
I want people to take away my sense of optimism, and I want them to share in that optimism. I'm a business reporter. I've covered housing for many years. It's really easy to get down. It's really easy to feel sad. But I also think that Oregonians are extremely smart, extremely resourceful. They are go-getters, they are problem solvers, and that's something that inspires me about this state. And I want people to share in that sense of hope.
Okay, and John Crum and Colleen and Greg, are they all still in Bend?
I believe so, yes.
Okay, well, we'll leave it there. Hope people will get the book. That's all the time we have. Thank you, Jonathan.
Thank you so much, Mike.
My guest was Jonathan Bock. He's the author of High Desert, Higher Costs, Bend and the Housing Crisis in the American West. I'm Mike Green. You're listening to the Jefferson Exchange on the News and Information Service of Jefferson Public Radio.